Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Waiting the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw, moments removed from the third to last three-hour edition of Raw. The countdown is on, the true final countdown to October the 7th.
Oh, yeah. Your WrestleMania.
Can't wait.
Summer break, almost.
Yeah. This time in a month, we'll be signing off by this time.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. Dude, it was so hot today in the city. Doesn't feel like September, man. It felt like it was so ungodly hot outside. It was just disgusting.
I mean, it was hot.
It was really hot.
But man, it wasn't like particularly hot compared to some of the days we have in summer. I think it felt more hot because we've had cold days in between. And in fact, like we have cold mornings, but it gets really hot in the evening. So yeah. Dress in layers, I guess.
Well, don't dress in layers. It's really
dress in layers so you can take the layers off throughout the day.
Understood. Okay. How was your weekend? Did you have a productive one?
Productive? I don't know. Maybe not. No, actually. I think I just caught up on rest. Okay. So in that sense, it was productive. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. It was a manageable weekend.
Cool. Glad to hear it. Yes. UFC post show Sunday?
Correct. Yes, that happened on Sunday. I have a great story to it's not a great story at all. It's just something. I feel like over the years I've kind of hammered Apple, sometimes fairly, sometimes unfairly, but I've run into this problem over the last month or two where the charger on the port on my phone.
Yeah.
To charge my phone, I'd have to put the cord in and then angle it so that it would start charging. It just was this constant problem. And then last week, it finally hit it. I could not move or wiggle this thing around. My phone just would not charge. And Shout out to the listener that had sent me a wireless battery adapter, because that's the only way I could charge my phone. So I had to figure this out. So I was going to go to the Apple store. I wisely was told by my wife, make sure you make an appointment in advance. I'm like, you can't just walk in? She's like, definitely not. So I showed up at the Apple store. The earliest they could see me was Saturday night at like 5:30 p.m. So I got there. I walked in, and dude, this mall, the Apple store is rammed. There had to have been 150 people in the Apple store. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. There's people.
Typical.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The people that are checking out the VR headsets are just, Who in God's name would spend money to wear that in public?
Probably you in the future, John, if I have to be honest. I mean, who would have thought we'd have these things, you know, all of us, and we all have these iPhones.
Yeah. I'm not duct taping that phone around my face. Okay.
You're probably not getting the first iteration, but like 10th generation, when everybody in every household is going to have one, you're probably going to have one of these.
I promise you I won't. Anyway,
Okay, remind me in 10 years about this.
So I walk in, I'm expecting, you know what, the UFC pay-per-view is going to have to wait tonight because there's no way they're going to be seeing me on time. But I went up, I said, hey, I have an appointment. Woman comes out. She's like, can you please take your phone out of the case? It's like, I can indeed do that. If you are not comfortable taking my phone out of my case, I will do it. She's like, we have to take it to the back. Is that okay? I'm like, whatever you have to do in the back, that's your business. Went to the back. 5 minutes later, comes out. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in the port. We cleaned it out. It's all good. Do you want to check? I'm like, I would take your word for it, but sure, I'll check. It's fixed. I was like, is this where I leave? She's like, yeah, you're done. It's like, do I have to pay anything? Nope. I was like, wow, Apple, this is phenomenal. I was expecting. I had to put like a deposit down for this thing. And it was like, this is free of cost. This was
the problem was just gunk inside the port.
That was it. She literally told me, is there anything else that's wrong with your phone that we could do while we're here? I'm like, no, my phone is pretty good. Like, it's not that old of a phone. That's really the only problem. And she ran like this diagnostic test. She's like, yeah, everything checks out on your phone. It seems okay. There's no issue. I'm like, none. I have had a wonderful experience here. I hope you have a great Saturday night. She said, you too.
Oh, lovely. I'm very happy for you that it didn't cost you more money or time and that it was such a simple problem to fix.
Yeah. So there you go. The Apple. Okay. Apple, it's, I would, I see good things for this company.
Do you? Okay.
I'm optimistic.
All right.
All right. On that note, that was my wild, insane weekend. All right.
Yeah. 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 You got gunk out of your charging port.
How can you prevent that? I mean, it's not like I'm throwing my phone into like, you know, a sand dune or something, but it's hard to prevent this stuff.
Yeah. You'd be surprised at what gets trapped like, inside your pocket.
It's like this open, you don't have like a port protector. Can I cover this? Like, it's,
no, you can't, but there are tools you could buy. You could buy compressed air that typically helps. But no, maybe take it to the professionals. Let them deal with it.
I'm not dealing. I had to sign a waiver that they might lose all the data on my phone. I was like, okay, well, worth the risk, I guess. Let's see what happens. Then I would have had a different story to share. Okay, let's get into some things that are coming up. You know, Wei, I wish I was so happy after this. I wish you could have taken a photo of my smile as I was leaving the Apple store. And there are some people out there who are professionals when it comes to photography, and one of whom is going to be joining you Tuesday on the Wellness Policy at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Is that not accurate?
That is correct. James Musselwhite, wrestling photographer, wrestling portrait photographer, I should say as well. He will be joining us on the Wellness Policy to talk about photography, and especially photography as it relates to professional wrestling. He's just somebody that I think we're interested in speaking to for a number of reasons. Number one, just kind of given his unique background, I think, in the industry, and also I think to speak a little bit about maybe his thoughts on the aesthetics of professional wrestling, maybe some of his most favorite iconic images in wrestling history. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation. That's okay. 1 o'clock at youtube.com/postwrestling, and the podcast will be available for free on the Post Wrestling Cafe feed. So you can sign up for free at postwrestlingcafe.com. You get a lot of freebies there from time to time. But sign up for $6 and you get everything.
Take the plunge. Just do it.
Yeah.
It's not as cheap as getting your iPhone fixed, but it's still a great deal.
Well, you got your phone fixed for nothing, so it's actually more expensive than that.
On we move. We've got developments on the AEW media rights front, right. Courtesy John Oran, the media rights heavyweight, is weighing in because he put out his twice weekly newsletter over at Puck, and the headline, Zaz on the ropes. You know, wrestling related pun. It's time to get down to wrestling related business, and this is straight from his Puck newsletter. These days, David Zaslav is putting some of that $1.5 billion that he saved on the NBA to use. First, there was the French Open deal, then the Savannah Bananas broadcast agreement, plus the CFP, Mountain West Football, and Big East Basketball packs. Now I'm told that Warner Brothers Discovery is close to finalizing a package to renew Shahid and Tony Khan's All Elite Wrestling. Insiders are telling me that a formal announcement could come as soon as next week, barring any last-minute challenges. It looks like it will be a four-year deal, 3 years guaranteed, plus an option, and the $170 million per year number floating around wrestling message boards is apparently in the ballpark. So, you know, I think John O'Rand, he's been scanning all the boards out there, getting a good sense of the average annual value. He goes on to state, according to the parameters of the agreements, AEW matches will air on TNT, TBS, and True TV twice a week, further evidencing Zaz's strategy of making the latter two networks more valuable and sports-oriented in the cable bundle as the potency of TNT declines, sans professional basketball rights. Can WBD survive the renewal wars with a year-round sports lineup that includes October baseball, March Madness, the Stanley Cup, NASCAR, some college football and basketball, a little tennis, made-for-TV golf matches, fake baseball, and now second-tier wrestling? Ouch. We're about to find out. Meanwhile, this deal marks a clear success for AEW, which launched 5 years ago with a threshold WBD deal. AEW is also pitching another package, primarily to broadcast channels. There's no timetable for when AEW will start to push that deal. There's a lot in there. So going with the idea that this is at least a framework for the deal would include TNT and TBS that you would assume would mean Dynamite and Collision staying put. But what would be additional content would be whatever is going to make up this programming on True TV that he is listing at twice a week. Is this going to be reality-based programming? Is this more in-ring content? That remains to be seen, but also giving credence to the idea that after the exclusive negotiating window ended this past summer with WBD and AEW, of AEW shopping to a broadcast network. We have heard the rumors of Fox being out there, whatever iteration of Fox it is. And I guess the other questions here, $170 million per year would be a significant increase over where they are now. But this would also call for more programming as well. So you have to take that cost into account.
And as far as we know, what is the sort of ballpark number that's out there right now that they're currently making?
So the originally pre-Collision, they were getting just under $45 million per year. Then Collision was added. Brandon Thurston's estimate is that that took them up to about $70 million per year. But that's also adding another night of production on Saturdays. And so let's go with the idea of 70. You are adding hours of programming here with True TV, but it's still a sizable increase. Like, this in theory should take AEW, like, the idea of topping, I would say, 115 to 120 million, I think once you were well above that figure, like, you're talking like a real good spot for AEW. But there is also the big question about the pay-per-view component. There's nothing in here related to Max, at least in John Oran's reporting, and that's a big question mark as we are looking at if that is going to be baked into this upcoming media rights renewal.
Sounds reasonable. Maybe for me, the big surprise is maybe the, I think several sounds like additional hours of programming that we might be getting attached to AEW television. I suppose when you break it down, I mean, what do we have right now that's out there? It's Dynamite, Collision. Those two can continue to be spread amongst, you know, TBS and TNT. Could a Rampage see its move to True TV? When they say True TV twice a week, do they mean the same programming airing two different times, or could they mean two separate programs airing on True TV?
According to the parameters of the agreements, AEW matches, I don't know if that's just John Oran, like, just colloquially referring to AEW programming as matches, or if he's it sounds specific to, like, this is in-ring content. Okay. Would air on TNT, TBS, and True TV twice a week. It's a little ambiguous.
Yeah,
I don't know if you would be just replaying a show twice a week, or if it's going to be new content that is airing twice per week. But let's go with the idea that this could, in theory, just with those three networks, you're probably looking at 6 hours of possibly 6 hours of original programming there. Yeah. And could be more, it could be less, but we're looking at that neighborhood. The idea of another component if they strike a deal with something outside of WBD. And as well, like, the Ring of Honor question is Ring of Honor somehow worked into any of this?
Could that be considered the deal outside of WBD? I mean, that's not the rumor, I suppose. The rumor is whatever the Shockwave thing is, right?
I don't know how much interest you're going to have in an ROH outside. I mean, there was an interest of ROH inside. All we know is that CW did kick the tires on ROH programming. But, I mean, that could be something in all of this as well. The key thing is $170 million. But, again, that goes against what are your increased costs. I mean, if you're talking about the idea of another program, like, let's say they get an FS1 deal, a 2B deal. Like, if you have to add another night of taping, like, that's taking on even more cost at that point. Like, how much can you work into two nights of tapings given all of these hours that you are responsible for?
Sure. For the $170 million, though, it may be hard for me to think that they would add a whole additional night to provide that. I mean, I think at present they have two separate tapings, of which they could produce two different programs. You have your, you know, mainline Collision and Dynamite, and then the hour before or afterwards that you could use to film matches for Rampage or potentially this new show. And that they're currently using to, you know, for a mixture of Ring of Honor, and that, you know, you can clearly use that space instead of for Ring of Honor for something else. And I mean, it all sounds like it's really good news if this, you know, this report turns out to be true for AEW.
Like, this is going to put them into a very advantageous position. Like, there is not going to be any of this is AEW. Like, Tony Khan had stated when asked at the last media call about this deal taking them to become the second most profitable company in wrestling history behind WWE, and he said it would, maybe not year one of the new deal, but I'm paraphrasing, within the lifetime of the deal. Like, there is still, you know, year one of this deal might not fully get them to profitability, but maybe that is a realistic goal by 2026 when there's escalators into this deal and such. But this, like, if you were to tell me $170 million, I think that would be a really satisfying amount, given still some of the holes we have in this.
They're also operating at this point at a pretty high frequency of pay-per-views that I think the audience has kind of grown accustomed to. You know, like, we're talking about like, pretty good, what, 90,000 for All Out? Is that the number that's out there right now?
I can't recall what the ballpark is, but that's a relative, yeah.
Like, you know, it's a really high frequency of pay-per-views that they're putting out there at a pretty high cost, and I think they're probably very profitable for this company. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that pay-per-views aren't being mentioned as part of this report tells me that that's still something that we have to await news for.
All right, we're going to follow up with more of this on Wednesday's Pollock and Thurston. That, again, new start time that we have moved to 1 p.m. Eastern time each Wednesday. Wade, did you have a chance to see any of the Sphere show that the UFC presented on Saturday night? Did you get to see any of the highlights, the production elements, and any thoughts just kind of from afar of what the UFC produced on Saturday?
Yeah, my primary interest was mostly in the production. I got to watch all the incredibly special video packages that they made prior to the show on they're really all over Twitter, and I believe at this point they're all over their YouTube as well. Spectacular. Really, really, really amazing. The likes of which I don't think we've ever seen before for a combat sports presentation.
No, I mean even your best, like, Pride, WrestleManias. I mean, I'd never seen anything like this for a combat sports event. Like, it was really astonishing to see. I mean, there were complaints on the prelims because it was really just the outline of the Sphere was what you were watching. It really did not become the Sphere until the pay-per-view, and that's when they, like, turned the switch on and, as Mark Shapiro would say, activated the Sphere.
Activated the Sphere. Okay. All right.
Record number of sponsorships for UFC, by the way, on Saturday.
I wouldn't have expected anything less. So you and Eric Marcotte did a show on Sunday talking about it, but just for the audience that might have not listened to that, what are some of your general thoughts on the entire show?
I mean, I thought the production was incredible. Like, I mean, there were a lot of questions about it and curiosity. Like, what would $20+ million in production turn into. And I just thought it was incredible. Like basically the idea was they were going to tell you like this evolutionary story of Mexico's history throughout the night. And in between the main card fights, you would go through these 90-second videos that they had produced, and they have uploaded all of these. And then with each successive fight, a new world would be created into the backdrop. And it was, like, honestly, I just thought it was incredible to watch. And this is watching at home. I couldn't imagine being in person for this. And yeah, it was a really expensive ticket. They did a $22 million gate. But I just thought it looked incredible. Like, I was just in awe of like what they were able to pull off for all of this. I don't know if they will ever do this again. This was a super expensive show for them to produce, but UFC also has an exclusive deal with MGM. Like, this only happened because the Canelo Alvarez fight got the T-Mobile Arena, because that's where this event was going to be. And because of that, they wanted to run Mexican Independence Day weekend, and they got a one night, you can go run the Sphere for one night, but they are locked into this deal with MGM. But you can't discount. I think this got, I saw much more favorable reaction to this than complaints about any of it. Like, the complaints going in were like, was this a strong enough card? The ticket prices were through the roof. That's just a reality of ticket pricing across the board. And the fact that many people spotted Nick Khan being there in attendance, it's a natural question of would a WWE have the, not so much the resources to run this, but the, will TKO have the stomach for this again? Because a lot of the business community, this was all about a show that the expenses got to be just so bloated for the show. But these were also the first ones to pull this off. And second time around, there may be a lot of efficiencies that were not realized the first time around. And what cost you $20 million, you know what you're dealing with. Like, they said they spent 4 months just trying to deal with out having a lighting rig above the octagon, and how to deal with that, and to utilize, like, the lighting they had, it's usually 40 feet above the octagon. The lighting was 300 feet above, and they had to light this for the audience, for the broadcast. There's a tremendous panel discussion that the UFC posted with the production team answering questions for an hour talking about this. This was before the event, so they couldn't really go into too many specifics, but giving you a broad overview. But I mean, I texted you during the show. Like, I was just blown away by watching this on the broadcast, like what it was capable of. And I think it translated so well.
Something tells me this will happen again. Just the amount of money that's being exchanged, and that the amount of money that could be exchanged between, you know, TKO, Riyadh, and everything else. Something tells me that something like this will happen again.
Yeah, like as much as, you know, TKO is going to be watching every expense, and this was a big one. You know, Brandon Ross at Lightshed Partners had heard the sponsorship from Riyadh season was around $20 million. So you pretty much had Riyadh season kind of write off the production expense, and then it's the gate that I'm sure the UFC is taking on a pretty healthy amount percentage wise of. There's the pay-per-view licensing from ESPN. All of the, it was a record amount of sponsorships. Like, UFC made out just fine from this show, but it was an exceptionally costly one to run. But I mean, what a advertisement for your branding and the amount of people that are going to see this. And it was an outstanding commercial presentation for the UFC itself.
And maybe just, you know, expanding our ideas of what a combat sports event could look like. You know, this really felt like it was almost like half IMAX movie, half, you know, UFC event. And I find that very novel. We had, Robert Pearson, who attended the event on your review with Eric Marcotte. So you can listen to that for his live take. How much was, do you know an average ticket price, or at least like what the range might have been for tickets for the event?
I mean, the top end were like over $12,000 for tickets. And even as low as they got by Thursday or Friday, I don't think there was a ticket like under $700.
Okay.
Even at the end.
So we're not talking prices that are so outrageous that I don't think a wrestling market could stomach it, you know, at least at this point. Like if you asked me maybe 5 years ago, yeah, I feel like those prices are too out of reach for wrestling fans. But these days, no, not really. And WWE doesn't have those doesn't have that agreement with the MGM Grand. So what would stop them from doing a big show like this?
Yeah, I don't. These are very high ticket prices. Like I don't know if you would be if you would find that same demand among wrestling fans. Like 14 grand a ticket. I mean, that's
okay. That does seem like a really high end. But like I guess the low end doesn't feel that crazy anymore, John.
The low end. Yeah, it's Well, it's beyond Nick Khan being there. I mean, Bob Iger was there from Disney, but also Jeff Bezos was there from Amazon, and that certainly. Okay. Got a lot of buzz as well. Like UFC is going into their contract year, and I think you're like, this was noteworthy that Jeff Bezos was there.
So like 90% of the world's money was inside the sphere is what you're saying?
Yeah, and the ironic part is all of those people, they probably got comps to this thing.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Also, just want to make quick mention, won't run through all of it, but I did get to watch the CMLL anniversary card from Friday night at Arena Mexico. Terrific atmosphere for their 91st anniversary. You think we'll make it to 91 years, you and I?
Of course we will. Yes, yeah. Be optimistic. We'll be with our VR glasses, you know, everywhere. Yeah, of course.
So in a, I guess, debated move, they went with Chris Jericho and Mystico in the main event above the four-way mask match that they had. And I have to say that Chris Jericho can now say he has headlined the Tokyo Dome, he has headlined WrestleMania, and he has headlined a CMLL anniversary card. This was very reminiscent to me of WrestleMania 18, where these two, following that mask match, they were going to have their work cut out for them. And I have to say, having watched it, sometimes we watch these and by the end of it, it's like, okay, I disagreed with this going on last, but it made sense based on how the finish went or so-and-so. This was one where, yes, Mystico is your major star. Jericho, from a just casual name recognition, was going to be the biggest on the show. However, the drama and intensity of that mask match was so incredible. And it wasn't like Mystico and Jericho had a terrific match either. The ending of it was, you know, Mystico won 2-1, despite what you were told on AEW's social media or on Collision. Jericho did not win this match. And afterward, he attacked. It's weird. He comes earlier in the night. They attack Orange Cassidy, him and Big Bill. And they're doing the learning tree gimmick. They come out. He comes out to Judas. So he's going back to like his old character. But then he gets on the mic and it's hi, guys. And reverting to the learning tree character. And the end sees a beatdown of Mystico and Orange Cassidy runs out for the triumphant save. This all happening on a CMLL anniversary card where the final image is like Orange Cassidy putting his sunglasses on Mystico and then exiting the ring. I just think, like, this audience, I don't think they were here for this particular feud. I think Chris Jericho brought a lot of added attention, but I do think, in hindsight and for many in foresight, that ending with the mask match, I just don't think you can replicate that kind of an atmosphere on a sold-out Arena Mexico, the drama of a long-standing figure like Euphoria, who has been wrestling since 1990, being unmasked. And they had a hell of a match. It went 36 minutes. The drama was incredible. They got down to Hechicero and Euphoria, and they went a significant amount, just the two of them, after the eliminations of Esfinge and Valiente. But that would be a match I would highly recommend. And Cubs fan did a report for us on the site as well. He also did a rundown with his thoughts at luchablog.com that I thought was a really good breakdown of the show as well. But, you know, it certainly, I think Jericho added more non-CMLL attention to it. But, I mean, I think people underscore just how important the masks are, those those characters were in the mask match that I feel that going on last. I don't think you would have run a risk of the crowd just bailing after Chris Jericho's match. I think it would have been and even Jericho afterwards doing a promo afterward. I mean, I think he even noted the fact that, you know, the air is really thin here. And I mean, the La Mystica finish at the end, it did leave a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, unfortunately, maybe just judging by some of the headlines coming out of the show, it unfortunately is another sort of notch on the misses that you could say of Chris Jericho's 2024. I don't know what people's expectations might have been for a match like this, but I don't think it's been very well reviewed. And seeing some of the highlights myself, you know, you could definitely doubt whether or not it deserved its place on that card. And I think the follow up with the sort of strangeness of the AEW announcing that he's won the match certainly didn't help things either.
Yeah, well, the card, it was a very entertaining card. I think that, like, there were some misses on the undercard, but I did think overall, like, it was a pretty enjoyable show, a pretty lengthy show, too. Like, it went over 3 hours, but the mask match seemed to be the consensus highlight, and just the whole post-match was, they handled it really well, and the crowd was, you know, just biting on every near fall of what it would mean for whoever was going to lose the mask. All right, some other things before we get to Raw. NXT, we did not get to cover this over the weekend, but they will be doing their first show on CW, October 1st in Chicago at the Allstate Arena. The following week, October 8th, was supposed to be at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, Missouri. And the last count from WrestleTix was around 2,100 tickets out, and they have made the preemptive move to take the show out of the Enterprise Center, and they are now going to Chesterfield, Illinois, although still promoting it as St. Louis on tonight's broadcast when promoting tickets. It will be at the Factory in Chesterfield, Missouri for October the 8th. And I guess a realization that they were not going to be having a suitable enough audience at the Enterprise Center for this show that is being advertised around Randy Orton's appearance.
Kind of reminds me of us in trying to book Yuck Yucks this summer.
Oh, yes.
And looking at our ticket sales and being like, how do we get out of this? And yeah. WWE maybe feeling
we went
the same
to Chesterfield.
Pressure. Yeah, we went. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, what can you say? You know, I guess Randy Orton is not really the sort of big difference maker. Although, like, what are numbers right now for the CM Punk show?
They're over 6,000 at this point, but it's not like it's that's knocking them dead either. Just Punk appearing. I mean, it's a reality of where the NXT brand is. Has it grown since the early NXT 2.0 era? Of course, but we are not at a, like, the idea that was being thrown around when the move to CW was and taking this on the road. Like, this is not a brand that is mature enough to be going on the road on a weekly basis, and that's with piggybacking off a main roster star that you would not have at your disposal weekly or even selectively.
But piggybacking off of a PLE crowd that's there already for a main roster PLE,
sure,
for instance, that has worked out great for them.
That works out very well. But
you're talking
as
about
a
like
standalone, it's still especially for the TV. This is not a PLE, and you don't even know what you're getting with a Randy Orton. Like, are you really invigorated to buy a ticket for a Randy Orton promo or run-in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's the latest there. And then last thing we'll talk about here are the first numbers for SmackDown on the USA Network. The numbers are in: 1,723,000 viewers on Friday and a 0.55 in the demo. So they actually ended up beating the demo audience that they posted on Fox for their last show the week prior. And this is in many million fewer homes for the USA Network, but this was not going against an NFL game on Peacock. But it was the number one program on cable on Friday night. There was one, ironically, they were behind Fox's coverage of the college football game between Arizona and Kansas State. And boy, Fox got this graphic out to promote how big their audience was on Friday night and how big it was up over the previous week's Friday night programming on Fox.
Ooh.
Which is, I mean, it's not inaccurate, but very deceptive when it was like it was such a lower than usual SmackDown. But I mean, WWE's out the window, and it's time to.
They seem like they had such an amicable breakup. Okay, you know, like, you know, on the last episode, there's that nice little tribute to Fox. And just thank you, see you again next time, and then the week after, come on, it's just slinging mud here. Look at this.
So, yeah, a 0.55, very, very good number for their first week. Also, in Canada, so this is the way things work now in Canada. When we report the specifically the SmackDown numbers up until this past Friday, it would, here in Canada, if you do have a Fox affiliate, then you would be able to have access to SmackDown on both your Fox affiliate and Sportsnet 360. Here in Southern Ontario, you probably have the Buffalo affiliate of Fox. So you are, if you're watching on Fox, that is not calculated into the Sportsnet number. So now you only have one place to go for SmackDown in Canada. You don't have the Fox affiliate. So the number was up, and I'm sure some of that was the reasoning for Fox, but not entirely. Like, I've seen weeks where it hasn't aired on the Fox affiliate, and it's not like it gets a crazy increase. But for this week, it ended up doing 334,700 viewers, which would be the largest SmackDown audience I've seen in Canada that I've been tabulating these numbers. It's easily the biggest of the year, a huge number in Canada. And there was a residual effect because Main Event followed SmackDown. That did like 125,000 viewers. And then they did a replay of SmackDown at 11 that did another like 58,000 viewers on top of their 55,000 viewers. So it was a big audience that was tuning in for SmackDown on Friday night in Canada.
Everybody wants to see what this new logo looks like. Do you have an opinion, John?
Yeah, I'm willing to give SmackSound a chance. I'm not going to cast aspersions. It's a logo. I don't know. It all blends to me and looks identical.
It's fine. We'll all be used to it. We'll be used to it in a few days.
What about the theme? Do you like the theme?
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
For all the like complaints about any of it, it was like, after AC/DC, can anyone even name what the theme was after AC/DC got dropped?
No. Wasn't it some generic like rap thing?
I can't tell you. That's like how much the theme means. So it's like I can't get too bent out of shape over stuff that just totally blends into the background for me. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what the Raw theme is right now. It's not anything on the top of my mind.
No. I won't be doing it at a wrestling karaoke anytime soon.
Okay, well, there you have it, folks. Your news can always be found at postwrestling.com. Wellness Policy on Tuesday. Pollock and Thurston on Wednesday. Thursday, Way and I are presenting Rewind Away. It is a two-hour edition of Raw. We're getting ready ahead of things with a two-hour Raw from December 6th, 2004, headlined by Trish Stratus and Lita for the WWE Women's Championship. And it is a Raw hosted by Chris Jericho and includes a Divas Limbo contest.
Is that right? Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So the first women's main event on WWE Raw. And I'm guessing not the first limbo contest in WWE Raw.
That's something we're going to have to check the archive for to see. It might have been the first limbo contest. I mean, they had done musical chairs by this point. This might have been the first limbo contest. But
see
what the Divas are subjected to fill a segment in 2004.
Progress takes time.
Yeah, I don't ever see that segment memorialized like the main event is on this show.
Mm. Well, let's watch it and see if
we'll watch the whole show.
We will
memorialize and get our thoughts back to you. Yeah. Thursday, Rewind Away, postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days access and your ability to access our archives, access to our weekly Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course shows, and later on this month, Destruction and Kobe, and also returning this week, MCU Later. Get the H out.
That's right. Correct. Yes. Sorry. It took me a second there. This Thursday, actually. Yeah. This Wednesday, Agatha All Along is debuting on Disney Plus, and every week, WH and Rich will be joining us with a special guest to talk about it. So that's Thursday. I believe the first two episodes are actually dropping at once on Wednesday.
Oh, my goodness. So it's a lot of Agatha right away.
Oh, yeah, it is. And The Vince Doc is out
next week. This week, the Dump Matsumoto series comes out on Thursday. And then next week is the Mr. McMahon series.
Okay.
A lot of Netflix busy. Coming up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
And tonight we go to Raw, which will be on Netflix in the coming months, but tonight on the USA Network from the Moda Center in Portland, Oregon. 10,018 tickets distributed per WrestleTix, and of all our arrivals, Way, I was not expecting this. CM Punk, fresh off his injury of 2 weeks ago, drives up in a minivan and puts it in park, gets out of the vehicle, leaves it running, and the door open, which has to be a signal that him and Jack Perry have buried the hatchet if they both are participating in the same driving patterns where they pull up their vehicle, leave the door open, and keep it running.
This is quite the entrance. Maybe it's the Lee fitting effect that's really bringing everybody together. You know, all bridges I think could be mended.
So CM Punk, fresh out of his minivan, proceeds to come out to the ring, and he is often asked how many matches he has left, and the answer is way more than you think. And he has a mortal enemy now in Drew McIntyre. This has to end at Hell in a Cell. He may have been naive to think it would all be over after touching four turnbuckles. And he got jumped in Chicago. His wife and dog have been dragged into this, which they really have not been dragged into this, have they? A bracelet has been dragged into this.
Their names have been dragged into it, you know. So, yeah, once you bring their names in, then yes, they have been dragged into this.
Okay, well, we're not getting any home invasions or kidnappings, are we?
No, I don't think so. Not on WWE TV.
It's not going up to Larry's crib and leaving a t-shirt or anything like that. So he states that this is the second time he's been sent to the hospital by Drew, but he's too stubborn because he didn't get the job done. And he asks, how many Hell in a Cell matches do I have left? The answer is zero, which proves to be untrue. He then explains how his younger sister and his wife have asked him not to do this, but he is going to do this, and he's going to explain why. Because the devil is here. He has been pushed too far. He cannot promise he will kill Drew McIntyre, but he will make him bleed. And you're going to have to kill me because I'm prepared to die. And I'm prepared for my heart to stop. And if this is the end of my career, so be it. I will see you in hell. Till death do they part.
I thought this was a great, simple promo from CM Punk. It was a different type of, like, slower delivery than what we've seen from him. He gave us some, like, really great, haunting words, I would say. You know, I think a lot is said about, I guess, the acting ability of a pro wrestler. And I feel like every time I say somebody might be a good actor in wrestling, somebody's going to come after me saying, like, haven't you seen The Godfather? Haven't you seen, you know, Schindler's List? How could you say that this is good acting? Well, I'm here to say I thought this was good acting from CM Punk, okay? Really strong promo, very emotive, and did a great job of making the Hell in a Cell feel devastating, like a potential career ender. We got a promise of blood here in this match, so we'll see how they deliver it and how much of it they actually deliver. What did you think about the segment, John?
I thought this was a great promo. And then he left. He came all the way just to deliver this, and he's off. He's off to Orlando for NXT tomorrow night.
Well, listen, the car's running, you know? It's like...
Didn't pay for parking.
Yeah, no. Didn't want to get a ticket. No.
Backstage, Kathy Kelly speaks with Sheamus and stated that Pete Dunne, he hit me where it hurts, and he's not referring to his hand and the shillelagh. Instead, he took my dream away to become IC champion and a Grand Slam champion. And he reminds us how much Pete hates to be called Butch. He just hates it if you call him Butch, Butch, Butch. He pretty much just, please get this thing over. We need to extend this program because we're not giving you a finish that's going to be my win tonight. So we got to keep this going, and we need this chant to get over. So he states that tonight you're going to be my Butch.
Yeah.
I mean, was this coy enough?
At this point, they should really be telling people he loves it when you call him Butch. It should be Pete Dunne trying to encourage people calling him Butch. I don't know what they could do. It's not really working, I would say.
No, they got into a brief Butch chant and they moved on. Like, this is not catching on. This is not this big thing. Like, they just don't care.
Yeah, Butch feels like we're so far removed from that period at this point, and I don't know. I just don't get the sense that people care that much about Pete Dunne one way or another, enough to, like, you know, rile him up. And I think when you're trying to, like, hit it this hard, it's very clear that it's something that you're demanding of the audience rather than something that they're going to be rebelling and doing on their own. So I don't know if this is salvageable, or if they just need to figure out a way to maybe amend it, or just maybe proceed with the storyline without getting the audience to chant Butch. We'll speak a bit more about Pete Dunne in a second.
So the match they had, it was a very good match that they had here. Early on, he goes for the 10 beats, but Dunne snaps the arm and then stomps the hand of Sheamus, but Sheamus comes back with an Alabama slam onto the desk as they go to the commercial. Liger bomb by Dunne, and then Sheamus gets it in his face and calls him a bitch as he fires off clotheslines. And it's like, oh man, that was a perfect opportunity for a great pun. So Wade Barrett caught the rebound and said that payback is a butch. We get a bombs away knee drop by Sheamus, and then Dunne is stopped on the turnbuckle. Sheamus hits a power slam off of the turnbuckle, hits the 10 beats, but then grabs the shillelagh. Sheamus nails him with a jumping knee to stop the shillelagh. Sheamus grabs the stick. The ref tears it away. So Pete Dunne, out of nowhere, has a, quote, solid wood cricket bat. And he takes this cricket bat, a sport that these two, I don't think, have ever shown any affinity for in all of our time watching them together. And he whacks him with this cricket bat. The referee doesn't hear anything. This is just a normal course of business, and he pins Sheamus. This was the most ridiculous finish you could come up with to prolong this. So we've escalated from a shillelagh to a wooden cricket bat.
In my mind, I'm trying to, like, scan my head to see my catalog of, like, how many times cricket bats have been used. And, like, I guess the latest time I recall was, like, wasn't it Jericho doing something? Wasn't there a cricket involved in one of his hardcore matches?
Sure.
Yeah, so
I'm trying to wonder,
like, think back if the Brawling Brutes had any sort of cricket bat involvement, and I don't think so. I think this might be the first introduction of it. Well, it is bigger than a shillelagh, you know? It is a very devastating weapon. So now we have, you know, each person with their signature weapon. Maybe Pete Dunne has, like, a very storied, like, history with cricket that we don't know about. So,
I mean, when he was wrestling as Butch, I mean, that was the soundtrack of most of his matches as that character. Good. So, yeah.
Hey, I thought this was a good hard-hitting match. I think Sheamus has become a very effective babyface. Dunne clearly needed a win here in order to keep this feud alive. He definitely still needs to unlock some of that personality and some of that voice. And I think you're seeing a bit more of him do that in NXT. But as far as, like, his main roster presentation, he's a very good wrestler. But as far as a gimmick and a personality, it's just not really there. You know, he's a guy with a bad nickname that they're trying to get over. And the audience isn't really taken to it. Really, a lot of this is with Sheamus. This feud just needs to get a little bit more personal.
The Terror Twins met up with Jey Uso. He said he'll be watching Damian Priest back, but he'll stay backstage. Xavier Woods comes in and states that we have a tag title match with the Judgment Day tonight, and we want to go it alone tonight just to prove that we still have what it takes, and asks them to stay backstage, and they agree. They also had the look on their face that, like, yeah, we were not too concerned about you guys, but noted, yeah, sure, you guys do it on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a replay going back to SummerSlam when Dominic made out with Liv, which, with what Wade Barrett identified as an X-rated smooch.
I don't know about that. I mean, it was banned on TV in a way. Like, they went off air before it actually happened, but...
A kiss?
Yeah, the first time they kissed.
Well, this is the SummerSlam kiss.
Oh, the SummerSlam one. Yeah, I wouldn't say it was X-rated.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what kind of porn that Wade is consumes, but this was, you know, maybe this was an extreme.
Interesting. Kissing porn.
Braun Strowman is warming up, and The Miz walks in, and Braun's doing curls, and he shows his bicep that looks a mess. Didn't seem good. And Miz says, "What did you mean last week when you said that I'm no match for Bronson Reed?" And Braun is like, oh, I didn't mean anything by it. You know, you've had a great career. And Miz says, yeah, I'm a Grand Slam champion. And Braun says, I just mean sometimes it takes a monster to beat a monster. And Miz concludes, he is not a monster.
Right, yeah. This was the one segment that I think was maybe a little bit harder to decipher. I mean, I guess this would tell you that Miz versus Braun Strowman is going to be Strowman's follow-up program to Bronson Reed, which would actually be, I think, a very disappointing follow-up use of Braun. But
what if Miz splashes him on top of a car? What if Miz drives him over with a car?
Okay, yeah, that would be pretty bad. But at the end, you're still getting Braun Strowman versus The Miz, which I don't think could be a worthwhile follow-up to what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, they are teasing right now a Miz something, you know.
Isn't this what they just do with Miz? They just tease that he's turning on R-Truth. They tease that he's going to do something with Braun Strowman. They just tease stuff with him. But you don't actually have to pull the trigger on any of this.
Well, clearly this was here for a reason, and I mean, we await to see what that reason is.
Natalya versus Zoe Stark. Stark hit her with a springboard missile dropkick. We go to break, come back. She goes for another springboard missile dropkick, but Natalya sidesteps, hits a German, and Joe Tessitore, fact-checking everything here, notes that these two previously had a match on Main Event in March.
All right.
Know that. So this is a rematch way. And the Z360 is countered. Natalya goes for the sharpshooter into a jackknife cover, back and forth covers, ending with Natalya getting the schoolboy and pinning Stark. And Stark is livid. She's so upset at this loss.
I actually thought technically this was a pretty good match, you know. In ring, it was strong, well worked, but the reactions to it were very quiet. Really, there's nothing all that interesting about the characters here. Low in personality. I would say kind of low in intensity as well. And they're giving Natalya some wins, you know, building off of the momentum of her return. Maybe setting her up for a TV title match with Liv Morgan is maybe about as far as I might see them take it here. Or just maybe a bigger feud with, what is it, PFC?
PFC.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see all those combinations multiple times first, and then we can graduate to championship programs. Kathy Kelly catches up with Rhea Ripley and asks her about the knee, but before we get an update, Finn Balor walks in and said he just wanted to tell her, "You're just as bad as Damian Priest. We were a family, but you two only cared about yourselves. You guys are the reason I didn't win the title last year." Rhea says that she will not allow Finn Balor to rewrite history. And we were family. We tried to make opportunities for everyone, and you're going to see just how bad we are at Bad Blood. And then Balor says, "Yeah, I told Dom to go for it with Liv and leave you." So Jay walks in. "Is there a problem?" And Balor says, "You should prepare for your IC title match because you're out of your league against Braun Breaker." And Jay just stood there, and he just digested this. This just seemed like a therapy session for Finn Balor to get a lot off his chest.
Oh, yeah. Clearly was holding a lot in.
This also felt like, oh, yeah, remember all those teases we did with Liv Morgan? This is the closest we're going to get to tying all those loose ends up about Balor and Liv spending so much time together.
Yeah, like with the hotel key card and everything. Like this felt like it was their way of maybe just closing that whole thing up and acknowledging that Finn has been in cahoots with Liv Morgan this entire time. I mean, I thought Rhea sounded pretty good here. She had some of the most, I would say, substantial and demanding dialogue we've seen from her, having to sell this sort of, I guess, betrayal from Finn Balor here. And I thought she did well.
Jey Uso comes out, and Joe Tessitore puts up a Keep Portland Yeet sign.
Yeah.
He says, come on. That's a good sign, man. And he, Jey.
Keep Portland weird.
Weird?
That's their catchphrase. Yeah.
Oh.
One of their slogans. Yeah.
Well, Bron Breakker is addressed here, and comes out, interrupts, and states how first Breakker gets into the ring to interrupt and says, we got any dogs barking in Portland? There were some dogs barking in Portland on Monday. Mm-hmm. That would just be the most painful reaction. People just did not bark back. So he told Jey, you should have stepped away. You've been here for 14 years. You're a big star, but I've done more as a single star in 6 months than you've done in your entire career. And I did it without my father and my uncle. I didn't need their name. I'm a breaker. And he says that I'm a dog. That's what I do. And I'm going to expose you next week because you're nothing without your family. Jey says, you know, I've been winning titles here since you were in diapers. I'm going to dog walk your ass next week, and we'll see what you're made of and if this is going to last or if it's going to end up short and sweet, just like your NFL career. The crowd is like, ooh. And Joe Tessitore sneaks in. He was a great football player. And Braun strikes him, goes for the spear, but it's Jey that spears Braun, and Braun rolls out to the floor as we get our setup for the match that is happening next week on the program.
Mm-hmm. I'm realizing that I think a great deal of our audience's enjoyment of these podcasts is to just hear you recapping lines that these wrestlers have to say.
I'm a dog. That's what I do.
I'm going to dog walk your ass. It's just funnier coming from you somehow. You know, because in the moment, I actually thought this was a really good segment. You know, Braun said it very good, very confident. His catchphrase, yes, is very corny. I'm a dog and that's what dogs do. But somehow, like, the audience is responding to it. I thought the substance to his promo was really strong. You know, essentially he's saying, I've been here for 6 months and I've accomplished more than you have, which is, I think, a very valid line to use against Jey Uso. But I thought Jey had a great retort that was also very charismatic and I thought pretty devastating in comeback as well, talking about his NFL career, which I guess he was undrafted, but then signed on as like, I don't know, some sort of backup player and then released afterwards. So, but I thought it was a good exchange, you know, very balanced, very equal. I think Jey's improvements in comfort and on the microphone over the past year have been immense. I think both of these two are exactly the types of talents you want competing for your IC championship. And, you know, we're pretty far removed now from the Gunther reign, but still, like, we have to take a step back and just be able to recognize, like, they've done a great job of rehabbing that championship to the point where I think it's actually being perceived now as something that is very valuable to win for either a Jey Uso or, you know, to retain for a Bron Breakker.
I mean, it's a title that's booked strongly. And I don't think, like, just the exit of one strong champion doesn't mean that the prestige of the title falls with it. Like, they followed up with, like, a fine title reign for Sami Zayn for the short time he had it, and you're getting more of what feels like a legacy reign here with Bron Breakker.
Yeah, like even beyond Sami Zayn, who I think to many people is already established, now you're actually putting the belt on guys that are about to ascend to the next level, either in a Bron Breakker or potentially a Jey Uso.
Blair and Cargill are confronted by Io Sky, and she calls Bianca Belair a coward for facing Kairi Sane tonight when Kairi has an injured eye. So Belair says, well, why don't you step up and take her place? And Io's like, okay. Like, why was this match made to begin with? Was she not cleared? Like, that's not Bianca's fault. Who made this match?
That's a great question. I mean, something tells me maybe they thought Kyrie would be cleared by today, and maybe she got there and...
They didn't even announce this match in advance that I'm aware of.
Oh, they did not.
This was not one that was announced, at least as of like this afternoon. This had not been announced.
I guess they had only announced it for the opening walk into the building. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
This was just a strange setup for a match. But anyway, we will get Io Sky and Bianca Belair later in the program. Finn Balor, JD McDonagh against New Day for the World Tag Titles. The champions are sent to the floor for the commercial break. And then we have Xavier Woods get the tag, and he just ran wild here. Carlito, Dom, and Liv come down, but they are attacked by the LWO. So everyone's fighting on the floor. Kofi hits a trust fall, and with the referee dealing with everyone on the floor, Woods hits a flying elbow. He's got the cover, but no ref to count. And Woods is screaming at the ref, and there's a ton of heat for this for the final minute or so. From the visual of Xavier Woods having the pinfall right through the end, like the crowd was just rabid for this. Mm-hmm. And there's a blind tag made by Balor as Woods is focused on McDonagh, who applies a crossface holding Woods in place for the coup de grace, and they get the pin. Again, a ton of heat for the ending here, and Xavier Woods is pissed. And he yells at Kofi. He's tired of this, and we would get more later in the show. But the cracks have formed. Is the New Day going to make it to their 10th anniversary?
Ooh. I thought the match was actually really excellent. I thought Portland was really a tremendous crowd for a lot of the matches tonight, and this was one of them. They helped elevate. Just excellent the double team offense from the New Day. I mean, they are very cold challengers here. I don't think anybody bought that they would be winning these championships, but still, like, they, I thought, elicited some tremendous reactions, and I thought they put on a really great match with the Judgment Day here. Interesting angle. Should we maybe talk about it now?
Yeah, we can get into this. So later on, they are in the back, and this is where Kathy Kelly is trying to get a word with Kofi Kingston, but Kofi has to go and speak with Woods, and he goes to find Xavier yelling at the LWO, and Kingston informs Woods, "I told them to be out there," and Woods is pissed, stating that they cost them the tag titles. The LWO are sent away, and Kofi explains, "I did it to offset the numbers game. Look what happened last week to the LWO. Wood says they never needed help before, and Kingston says that's because we had E. And right there, Xavier says, "Why? Because it's just you and I now? Am I not good enough? Why does the LWO know the plans for my title match, and I'm in the dark? What's going on?" And he storms off. I thought an interesting detail to all of this is that from the segment earlier, it was Xavier going behind Kofi's back and going to Priest and Jey Uso to not get involved. So you had both of them making strategies without informing the other.
We don't know that Woods didn't tell Kofi that
Doesn't watch this show.
But we don't. I don't know if that part is as, like, you know, blatantly conveyed. But okay, let's talk.
What was the purpose then?
Well, I mean, I'm saying we don't know that Woods and Kofi didn't come up with that decision together to tell the Judgment Day to tell the Terror Twins not to get involved, right? But we know that Kofi definitely didn't tell Woods about LWO getting involved, you know? Now, I find it all fascinating because this seems almost like a bit of a redo of everything that they've already done with Odyssey Jones here. Essentially, it's the same storyline, except you can argue this is just a furthering of, you know, those sort of miscommunication cracks. But I like the tone of what we saw tonight way better than everything we saw with Odyssey Jones and Karrion Kross. For one thing, this is not attached to the Final Testament and Karrion Kross. And for two, we don't have Kofi playing this, like, very hammed up over the top enthusiast like he was with Odyssey Jones. That almost made me feel like he was supposed to be the heel in that segment, and that Woods is supposed to be our perspective, you know, that was the normal one. in this segment, Woods is sort of the eccentric one who's kind of behaving definitely, you know, out of line. And Kofi instead is feeling much more grounded, much more like a normal person, thinking that he's just doing the right thing and that Woods is completely overreacting here. So I'm enjoying this a lot more. It's feeling a lot more serious. I think this is the most fire we've seen out of Xavier Woods maybe ever, certainly in years. And this continues to, you know, pick up a storyline that I think has made the New Day more interesting than they have in several years now. So we're finally starting to see some evolution. They're finally starting to sell the devastating effects of not having Big E around. And there's just so much untapped drama and story there. So I'm really glad to see they're realizing it now. I'm glad to see these two, who are incredible performers, get to actually finally have like interesting roles beyond just like giving their catchphrases and dancing. So let's see how they follow up.
We also had a Wyatt video, and this was the extent of their involvement on the show, where the words on the screen read, first we see Uncle Howdy, and goes into, even now, the words of the red grow stronger, whisper like a thousand voices, screaming in silence, guiding the knife until our hand are one and the same. You speak, we follow. I didn't follow any of this. It takes us to a QR code. And that took us to our latest GeoCities creation, full of messages about him.
Yeah, yeah. So I love it. I love this. I mean, I'm glad to see them like mixing it up here. You know, we've now established the Wyatt Six as characters both in and out of the ring. We've kind of done a lot with them visually in arena and even like on screen. Now let's mix it up. Let's give those appearances a bit of a break. Let them continue to feel special and bring back the QR codes. You know, like it almost makes you wonder why they didn't do this with Bray Wyatt, you know, with the White Rabbit when that was so popular. All of a sudden he came back and they completely dropped the QR code stuff. Now, let's, you know, unfortunately, we didn't have a whole lot of time with, you know, that version of Bray Wyatt before he had to go away. But I love the fact that they're able to go back and forth. There are so many elements now attached to this Wyatt Six group. You could do an in-ring match. You could do, you know, your kind of like creepy Bo Dallas-style promos. And then you could do these QR codes that continue to give us these fun Easter egg hunts. I think these are like perfect bridges to their next feud, whatever they're teasing up here. You know, could be a future opponent, could be a future, I don't know, ally, you know. So I haven't had time to like, you know, go through all of this. I believe it's like what, journal entries from somebody. So there are a lot of like, there's a lot of depth, I suppose, to be found here. And I'm going to let the internet do most of that work. So are you interested? Will you be going on the hunt, John?
No, I won't be. This was an attempt. I would have liked the authenticity of a guest book being placed onto this webpage.
GeoCities guest book.
Yeah, I would have signed it.
Yeah.
Then Bronson Reed has a video. He had opportunities taken away from him. He was deemed too dangerous and a hazard to the roster, and he had to show how dangerous he could be by taking out Rollins, R-Truth, Miz, and Strowman. Then I got COVID. And he had his opportunity given to Strowman. He says tonight he finishes the job. And the story about Braun as the victim, he will be the victim of WWE's true monster, Big Bronson Reed. And that takes us to the real main event of this show. For it got the Rewind Away graphic treatment from yours truly. Braun Strowman versus Bronson Reed, which is a real mouthful when you got to say those names back to back. Reed comes out. And he immediately runs at Braun, missing him, and goes into the corner, snapping the top rope, which comes off. And the crowd is just mesmerized. They're like, wait a minute, we're not supposed to see the ring come apart. This is crazy. And it sets the tone immediately. The bell never rings. And Braun hits a choke slam and then goes for the freight train. And the way they shot this, you would have thought that a man was like shot out of a cannon from the crowd, because this man just flies out of nowhere. I thought this was some like cruiserweight that was debuting and springboarding. No, it was Bronson taking a plant from the crowd and throwing him into Braun's direction and knocking down Braun, who is not deterred by this flying man. He gets up and he continues. He's got more gas in the train as he puts Bronson through the timekeeper's area, so they're down. Crowd's going nuts for this because it's just like a total video game sequence between these two. And Braun is left laying as Reed is being taken to the back, and the crowd boos this. So Braun follows, and they fight into the back, and it picks up. They tease that this is ending, but then they reset, and we see the two tackle one another into a production equipment setup. Braun just decides to tip over a golf cart. And in doing so, the golf cart takes his attention away because he turns around and is hit by a tsunami through a table, putting him through. But then he gets up from the tsunami and tackles Bronson through a wall as Adam Pearce is on the scene. Wade Barrett, who had some great lines on this show, calls for 10 ambulances immediately.
Well, for the 10 people that must be injured.
How many people were injured in all of this?
Well, they were walking through a lot of people and tossing a lot of people around.
I don't know if any of them needed ambulances.
Oh,
but
that's not for you to determine. That's for the physicians.
I think we had two bodies here, but it was just total chaos. I love this. I thought this was amazing, and I'm fine with just prolong this this program. I mean, I like everyone want them to get to this Braun Miz match, but I could deal with this for several more weeks.
Yeah, sure.
This is great. Like, just the blocking of this and doing this live. I mean, I don't think that gets enough credit for them to just do this all in one. Like, there's times it's very obvious when WWE has done pre-tape stuff, but this was all in one go. And
I do wonder if, like, the tipping over the golf cart to give us that cut was meant to
it's possible.
Cut something there. That seemed kind of like, you know, I guess there for without much reason. But I don't care. Like, you know, like the fact that it was seamless in execution. I thought all of this was just excellent. They keep
all of this with like the plant ringside and then into the timekeeper's thing. Like, it was all just seamless. And it was like they slowly teased like the segment was over, and then they do the backstage stuff. So this worked really, really well.
It's thrilling. Yeah. I mean, Brock Lesnar segments typically have this sort of like chaotic, you know, unpredictable type of feeling. And now you can almost say that they've perfected it, you know, using these two monsters. I think they keep coming up with these like great spots to make like the interactions between these two feel special. Now, I don't know if much is ever going to top that like tsunami onto the car. That was insane how they did that. But this was a tremendous follow-up, and I continue to love these because I can remember every spot coming out of it. You know, I can recall everything from, like, you know, the rope break to the literal rope break to the guy being lawn darted into the crowd to the barricade spot to the road case at the entrance to the golf cart to the tsunami through the table and then that fake wall and then all these little things clanging and falling off of it. Everything about it.
Yeah, that was a nice touch at the end. All this shit fell after they go through the wall, and it was just the exclamation point on the segment.
Yeah, I think these matches are actually a great showcase of WWE's production and live stunt coordination. I think we've seen, like, AEW has done good examples of it, but I think more often than not, they don't do it as well as the WWE. Sometimes you can argue WWE does these like over too well, too rehearsed, and they don't feel organic. But this one has felt really good, and they probably have so much careful planning with all of this, and so many things could probably go wrong, but everything here was pretty much flawless.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Pierce is reacting to this afterward, and Ludwig Kaiser comes in and wants to ask about finding an adequate opponent for Gunther. And Pierce is still disheveled from the last segment. He says he's working on it and feels that Zayn made a pretty compelling case, but Kaiser says he is not adequate enough. And with that, they hear Zayn's music as he enters the arena and states, Pierce also says that Gunther should come speak to me. So Zayn comes in, and he's talking about interacting with Bret Hart last week, wanting to be a champion like Bret. And Gunther continues to decline my challenge. He thinks he's in Gunther's head and that Gunther is scared. So Kaiser walks out and says that Gunther being scared is preposterous. He laughs this off and states he's trying to save Zayn from the worst embarrassment of his life. Take your WrestleMania win and enjoy it. It was the first time your family could look up instead of looking down on you. And miracles don't happen twice. So Zayn turns it around on Kaiser, thinking, I don't think that you need Gunther. You want to prove yourself just like everybody else. That's why you turned on Giovanni Vinci. And states, how are you going to earn that respect as Gunther's mouthpiece? At least have the balls to speak for yourself. So Gunther comes out to confirm that his balls are intact. And he asks Kaiser if there's anything you need to tell me. And Kaiser is hesitating and he's getting upset and says he's got to get something off his chest. And with that, drills Sami Zayn and hits him with the DDT as Gunther once again turns down Sami Zayn's request for a title match and leaves Kaiser alone with Zayn. But this time, Zayn makes his comeback with a released German and a Helluva kick onto Ludwig Kaiser.
Really strong work from all three, I thought. You know, I think Sami is really at his best when he's playing this sort of fiery underdog babyface self. And I think we can all suggest that he's probably not going to beat Gunther, but I definitely think like these sort of feuds are his way of campaigning for a future world championship role in the future. And you can maybe even argue they're kind of already setting that in motion and that they might already have plans for Sami Zayn winning the championship with the way that they're having Kaiser drill him so hard about never going to become a champion. And Sami himself, you know, saying so much that my one goal, his story, so to speak, you know, like he's establishing already for us right now that he's going, his last remaining goal in this company is to become a world champion. Kaiser was great playing Kaiser. And the pacing of this feud is really interesting because it's, I don't think it's happening at Bad Blood.
It could be.
It could be. We already have five matches.
Yeah, that could be more.
Not these days.
Well, we'll see.
I think it's likely for Crown Jewel, but even that feels like it's pretty far away. Like it's a month and a half.
Yeah. By the way, did you see the big moment at UFC when Turkey was seated next to Kendrick Lamar?
Oh yeah, I can't believe Kendrick was there. Yeah,
amazing. It was just.
I'm glad John Anik caught it.
Yeah, it was good on him, but man, they got. Man.
I mean, some people are suggesting that it's like a reference to Euphoria. I don't think they're being that clever, everybody.
No. I think even Terrence Crawford after was like, man, we don't look alike.
No, man.
It was hilarious. Kelly is, Kathy Kelly is in the back with Damian Priest. He's approached by Liv Morgan, who calls him a has-been, and that him and Rhea are desperate losers. Priest says, you're the only one in the Judgment Day who has a set, and Rhea is going to put them down your throat, and I'm going to end your scumbag boyfriend. So a lot of promises being made for these matches at Bad Blood, from CM Punk threatening blood to balls being placed down throats.
As is typical of a pro wrestling TV show.
Joe Tessitore, then coming back from break, back here in Portland, Oregon, the site of Unforgiven 2004, where Triple H defeated Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight Championship a scant 3 months before Raw would take place in Charlotte, North Carolina, featuring Lita and Trish Stratus this week on Rewind Away.
Thank you, Joe Tessitore. Appreciate it.
Bianca Belair against Io Sky. They had quite a good match here. If my one complaint was that it happened so many times in this match where one of them would do like this big move on the other, and then it was like the other person's turn to just get up and just do their move to them. Like there was no registering of like so much of this. It was more like a display. It was a very impressive athletic display that the two had.
It was definitely more of a sprinting type of match, you know, like in terms of pacing, like sort of like a Will Ospreay Ricochet type of match. And I imagine that's sort of like partially due to time constraints as well, but also maybe more of a willingness to show like a stalemate and also athleticism.
Well, they did get a commercial break in between here, and the idea is that both are like equals to one another, mm-hmm. and they're both like, you know, catching one another during all their big spots. Io would respond after 10 punches in the corner with Shotes and hits a double set of knees into the corner. Tilt-A-Whirl gutbuster by Belair, and then a missile dropkick lands for Io. Sky gets dropped on the top turnbuckle, and after the handspring moonsault lands, Belair gets a two count and then tries to military press Sky, who blocks it, turns it into a bridging German, and then Sky hits this crazy tope suicida onto Bianca Belair. Belair then gets up from this tope suicida and just lifts her in the air for the vertical and marches up the steps in this feat of strength. Tries for the 450, lands on the knees, and then Io tries for the over the moonsault. She's lifted up for the KOD, turns it into a small package, and gets the win. Joe Tessitore called this. I don't know if he could go higher than this if he was calling the main event of WrestleMania. He just went a 10 on the Richter scale here. And it was also a nice detail that he threw in earlier, noting that Bianca has only lost one singles match this year to Nia Jax, and then it set up this to be an even more meaningful win, that Io pinning not only one of the tag champions, but someone who's only lost one singles match this year.
Yeah, certainly. I thought this match was excellent. You know, it, I think tech, for, maybe if you don't count the, like Braun Strowman versus Bronson Reed was maybe the most entertaining match of the night, but in terms of like sort of technical ability, I'd probably prefer this. If this was on any number of PLEs, I feel like this would be a strong contender for match of the night. I thought there was an incredible display of athleticism in this match. Everything was flawlessly executed, and I think they just managed to really hit home the fact that these two are like the best of the best in this division, and you got to see it here. The finish, I thought, was tremendous. You know, I've seen a lot of KODs, but I've never seen it so seamlessly countered into a small package like Io did here. So it's really creative, you know, even despite the fact that, like, we've seen these two a number of times already, I felt showed us something very different and that much better than I think we typically see in the division.
It was very good, and the crowd was very much into this, and this is well into the third hour as well. On a show that not a huge amount of like in-ring on this show either, like this is a match, it's late in the show, there were a lot of non-wrestling segments on the show, but you always have time for a vignette, and we got American Made pulling up in their Hummer at an undisclosed location. You can't kill Gable, you can't kill the American spirit or American Made. They are done with the Wyatts, and I mean, your theory about this being like a low-key mega group is just growing exponentially.
I don't
by
know
the
if it's
week.
I don't know if it was my theory. It was more of a joke.
Well, I don't know. This was they're leaning into this.
Well, without they're playing into the stereotype, you know, which I think makes for a great sort of like they're playing into everything obnoxious that somebody might think about America. You know, this is America. Fuck yeah, right? It's a guy with a flag. It's Hummers. It's just I don't know, a lot of muscles and working out and like screaming, yeah, America. Like they've given now what is it, Brutus? It seems like they're giving him this like recurring laugh, almost like a Jim Neidhart-ish type of like laugh, which I think is a great way of like giving him some sort of like unique personality trait that works. I love this. This was perfect.
Maybe they should give the Creeds the Doomsday device and call it the Swing State.
Oh, wow. That might be
just for the next few months. Next week on the show, we are going to have Bron Breakker against Jey Uso for the title, Sami Zayn against Kaiser, and the return of Drew McIntyre. You miss 1 week, you get a return.
Yeah. When you're a big enough star, yeah.
Kelly speaks with Kaiser, who blows off the question about Sami Zayn's words resonating with him earlier and brings up Zayn's lack of loyalty to his friend Kevin Owens. They are jealous of one another, and Zayn will never be a world champion. Jey Uso runs into Ilya Dragunov, who wishes him luck tonight against Bron Breakker. And Jey says, yeet. And Ilya responds, yeet to you too.
Yes.
So with Ilya on his own, he was this close way to Ilya returns next week, but he showed up here in the last second to last segment. Judgment Day approach Ilya about being friendly with Jey Uso and also being complimentary of late to Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. And they warn him about who he is friends with. And Ilya says, I respect them. And that's more than I can say for any of you. And Balor says, this is a friendly reminder. Next time it won't be so friendly. And we're off to take care of one of your friends. And obviously not that great of a friend, because Ilya was like, just he was hitting the bricks after this. He had to go. You know, he wasn't sticking around to save his friends after.
Yeah, I guess so. Not his fight. Yeah, some tease of direction for Dragunov here with the Judgment Day. He he's somebody who really hasn't had anything going on in several months now, at least, you know, not storyline. So I wonder how he'll fit in with the Judgment Day, you know? I wonder who he among this group feuds with. And
Carlito. I want to see Ilya and Carlito.
Sure, sure.
Final match was Damian Priest against Dominic Mysterio. Early on, Priest is warning Carlito, and Balor ends up sending Priest into the post from behind, leading to Dom hitting a dive. They go through the break. Balor distracts Priest, leading to a roll-up, but Priest comes back with the Falcon Arrow, and Liv places Dom's foot onto the bottom rope. Rhea tackles Liv out of nowhere. Place goes wild for this, and Priest drops Carlito, catches Dom's dive, and throws him into Balor. Not quite the artistry of Bronson Reed throwing a fan, but this was the second human throw of the night. Priest then takes Dom, makes his big series of offense, and hits the South of Heaven to pin Dominic. And right as the match ends, Judgment Day attack Priest. Rhea gets yanked off the apron and thrown into the steps by Liv. Jey Uso is out, but before he comes out and he gets to the end of the ramp, and he's just standing there, and he's like waiting, and he's looking, and then a man in a hoodie comes to spear him, and wouldn't you know, it's Bron Breakker, because that's what dogs do. And so Jey is taken out, Priest gets hit with three coup de grâces, and the Oblivion takes out Rhea Ripley as the Judgment Day stands strong, ending the show dominant.
Really strong closing angle. Again, you know, this incredible crowd reaction definitely heightened everything, but they've just done a great job. Every interaction that the Judgment Day has with the Terror Twins somehow manages to just elicit some of the loudest reactions. And I think so much of it is just because, like, I don't know, the Rhea Ripley, anytime Rhea Ripley gets her hands on Dominic, it just, like, the crowd explodes. And then they just extinguish it right away by having Liv Morgan come out and take her out. And it's just this wonderful, wonderful just back and forth that just creates the biggest reactions almost all show. Really strong closing angle that, I guess, you know, continues to heat up Finn Balor. They gave him like three coup de grace here on Damian Priest. He's somebody that I think is looking to gain a whole lot from, you know, this elevated role as leader. They're making him feel a bit more intimidating. We now know that he was cheering for Liv Morgan, or what is it, telling Dom to get away from Rhea Ripley and go with Liv Morgan. So we could hate him for that reason as well. Overall, I think they're doing like a pretty good job of elevating Finn Balor to, you know, being a worthwhile contender against Damian Priest as well.
Yeah. So La Parca loses here, but stands tall with Liv Morgan at the end.
I'm sure it's a tribute of some sort.
Yeah. I didn't even notice this watching it. I'm only seeing the graphic now. So there you go. That was Raw. Pretty eventful show. A lot of segments just building up, not just Bad Blood, but also for next week's Raw, the one in Ontario, California. So they did a lot with the IC title. Very good promo from Punk. Very good promo with Zayn and Gunther on this show.
Those were some of the
highlights.
Yeah, just, you know, at this point where I think we're going away from 3-hour Raws, I really do feel like they've figured out how to make a 3-hour Raw watchable. And I thought this was one of those.
Wouldn't you know it? It only took them 12 years.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a good show, top to bottom. You know, every segment I thought offered something interesting or entertaining. Even like something like Natalya versus Zoe Stark, which I would have zero interest in otherwise, I thought they delivered a pretty good match. So, yeah, I thought it was a good show.
Minivans, humans being thrown, they had everything on this show. Everything you could want. But we want to hear from you. We are going to be going to forum.postwrestling.com if you would like to send a super chat. Type in your question, send it to Way, and we will get to those as well.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com, where all of our patrons can get their thoughts in after every one of our shows here at Post Wrestling.
We will start off with Surin, who is at the show tonight in Portland. I wouldn't consider myself the biggest CM Punk fan, but I've never seen him live before and was looking forward to it. But the Moda Center traffic was the seventh circle of hell, and I found myself gridlocked for over an hour, and I missed Punk's entire segment. Man, he should have taken the directions Punk had to get backstage in the minivan. I live 3 miles away and honestly probably could have walked there faster. Oh, well, his promo didn't seem too substantial. What an unfortunate miss here for Surin. Getting Io against Bianca was a nice surprise. The crowd was super hot. The men's tag title match was also really fun. I don't know if it came across on TV, but there was a big ass forehead chant aimed at JD, and he seemed to play it up.
Oh, I didn't notice.
I feel between him and who was it? Sonya Deville got the...
Yes,
the big,
team
the big
forehead.
Ass forehead label. I'm shocked they're rushing to Jay and Braun next week. Question for you. In this era of long title reigns, do you think Jay wins the IC title next week? I feel that he's at a point where he needs a big win, and he could always drop it back to Braun to build their rivalry. I don't see it changing next week, but I think like the idea will be they have this. Like, I think they're going to get a lot of time on next week's show. It's probably going to be the match that the show is built around, and they get their 15, 18 minutes or so. And I don't think it's in a state where Jay has to win, but I think he should come close. Hopefully it's a very heated match, and a loss. I mean, there's the question mark if he's going to be involved in any of the bloodline stuff in the lead up to Survivor Series. Is he involved, or is he divorced from all of that?
Well, the expectation, I'm sure, is there. Yeah. So, I mean, when we talk about Jay, we have to also talk about Sami Zayn and what his plans are. Sami, is campaigning to face Gunther right now, and I don't know if I see Jay doing a whole lot until Sami's wrapped up with that. At the same time, I mean, you know, this entire Braun feud has been based on, like, Jay and, like, my family's better than your family, you know, and you can't do it. You can't become a strong contender without the help of your family. So it wouldn't surprise me too much to like even see some family involvement, maybe in the form of a Jimmy, like as early as like next week. That wouldn't be out of the question. But now is not the time for Jay to win the championship. Braun's still establishing himself. I get the sense that whenever Jay does win the title, they might want it on a bigger stage with a longer chase. Yeah, I don't think we have to worry so much about Jay. Like, he loses and he's still going to be one of the most popular guys, I think, on this roster. Let's go to Muggin, who says, a good show highlighted by Punk's Hell in a Cell address. If that doesn't justify that Punk McIntyre closing bad blood, what will? Roman is going to have to take a back seat. Fight me on that bloodline stands. Yeah, I get the sense that they're going to close with the Hell in a Cell. I mean, they're all over the posters. You know, it's the feud that's the closing the trilogy. So I see that one. Bianca Io was good. Reed Strowman delivered more kaiju level chaos, and New Day is on shaky ground. Judgment Day standing tall is feeling like a rerun.
I mean, it's there is a lot of Judgment Day on the show, but it is progressing where they are building to these matches that they do have involved.
I don't disagree that they're kind of feeling like reruns, where like 1 week, you know, the baby faces have the advantage, next week the heels have the advantage. But man, listen to these crowds. This is like the type of back and forth that they want, you know? Could they stand to use a little bit more of like raising the stakes somehow, like some more lasting injury? Maybe tonight, like I thought what Balor was going to do with the coup de grace, I thought he was going to injure Priest's leg so that the Terror Twins could have twinning leg injuries heading into their matches, but they did not do that. But still, it's like right now we're about building Finn Balor, especially, you know, getting him to a level of a Damian Priest. So I thought that was productive, but I also don't disagree that some of it does feel like a rerun.
All right, we go to Matthew here from Nashville. He wants to talk about the AEW TV deal. If the $170 million does not include the pay-per-views going to Max, then this is a great deal for AEW. This would be a 243% increase over Brandon's estimate of $70 million. Even if the pay-per-views are included, I would still argue it's a really great deal. I'm not Brandon, nor would I want to try and fill his shoes, but if you estimate that AEW does 8 pay-per-views per year, at $50 per pay-per-view, and the average buys are $130,000. That would be about 6.5. We're getting into a lot of numbers here.
Is it at 8 right now? I thought it was more than that at this point. Is it still at 8?
At 8 sounds right. I'd have to double-check that.
Right.
Anyway, he goes on to state here, not a terrible package, but if they can get $40 million extra for PLEs from Max, I think the media rights would be a home run, notwithstanding the network deal. And he also speaks on the Sphere event. It was definitely the draw of the UFC 306 show, which ended up having a strong contender for Fight of the Year with Daniel Zellhuber and Esteban Ribovic. I believe the Observer remarked that an average ticket price of $1,500 US was good to cover the estimated building rent of $16 million US. So factoring in production costs, you would probably be closer to $2,000. It was definitely a spectacle, and I think a Mania weekend TV would sell out. But this is not a consumer-friendly approach. They're really targeting the upper. I don't know about that. I don't know about selling out a SmackDown. 16,000 people spending that amount for a SmackDown.
So
and Hall of Fame
so
for
I mean,
a TV.
So is it profitable even if they don't charge those ticket prices? Who's I mean, probably not. Not that high, but does it need to be that high? Like, you know, these concerts that like U2 are doing. I don't know if they're charging. I hope they're not charging that much.
Well, there's also a lot less involved in terms of like what you would be staging just production wise for a live sporting event versus like the U2 concert. It's the holograms of the U2 members that are
what?
Performing. It's not
the
actual
about?
Band that is performing.
Why not? Isn't it? It's not.
Double check this for me. That's what I was hearing in my limited research into this.
Okay, like I gotta read. Okay, U2 UV Octum Baby Live at Sphere was a concert residency by the rock band U2, focused on the group's 1991 album Octum Baby. The shows leveraged the venue's immersive video and sound capabilities, which include a 16 The show was conceptualized. I mean, come on, it's not just the holograms. I would not be paying. It would not feel special if it was just hologram U2. They're not even dead.
Would you pay $1,500 to watch SmackDown in the Hall of Fame at the Sphere?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
Well, do you think there are 16,000 people in this universe that would say yes to that?
But again, why does that have to be the average ticket price in order for it to be profitable?
If this is you would run this to lose money?
So how do we know that's the minimum? Like, how do you know what the minimum amount to bring?
I'm going based
is?
On this of what he's stating is the rental fee, which I don't even know if that's the legitimate figure here.
Is that the UFC's rental fee or? Okay. Yeah. I mean, listen, we're getting into the weeds of something I don't know enough about. But can you not run the Sphere at sort of like a, you know, lower scale of production to make it? I wouldn't even do SmackDown there. Like, I would do like an actual, you know, event. Like, I would do a PLE.
Yeah, I just, if you're talking about that, it's like, what if you're not using all the attributes of a venue like that? Well, then just book T-Mobile, book yeah. another venue.
It doesn't seem like a great venue for a Hall of Fame induction. I mean, it could.
This thing was not built for sports. Like this was not built for this in mind. What the UFC pulled off is remarkable, and I think it is going to inspire others to that were not thinking about. Like, I'm sure they were not thinking of doing like a basketball game at the Sphere, and maybe they still aren't, but it's going to open up the idea of what can be done in the Sphere.
You two playing the Hall of Fame with Fish playing SmackDown.
Okay.
And Megan Thee Stallion on stage.
Yeah, that sounds like a great lineup.
Hologram you two playing the Hall of Fame.
All right. We have one more for
Insert. Oh, is it my turn? All right. Let's go lastly to Annie. By the way, 9 AEW pay-per-views this year, 8 last year. Annie Rude says, one of the best episodes of Raw this year, and I had a blast with it. My favorite thing on the show was CM Punk's promo. His cadence was very good and did an awesome job of giving Hell in a Cell the gravitas it lost in the 2010s and selling it as the violent spectacle it's meant to be. Feud of the year. Lots of other good stuff on the show, including the J. Braun feud, Io Bianca and Braun angle, and Sheamus Dunn. Raw is by such a distance the best WWE show every week. It has the best roster and a writing team that treats characters and storylines with care. I was listening to Dave Meltzer on the Laps Fan Starcade 84 review recently, and he stated that Dusty Rhodes shot too many angles when they were hot and burned out their audience, making the booking stale. Similarly, do you guys think that doing too much fan service and giving the audience too much too quickly was one of the key factors behind AEW's cold stretch earlier this year? Giving the audience too much too quickly. I'm curious to know what Annie means by that. What constituted too much too quickly for this year of AEW, or even last year?
I mean, the argument has been in the other way, that AEW prolonged a lot of things, maybe even too long, of, you know, introducing things, and they would go on for longer periods of time as well.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure. I see where that line of thinking might be. Nor like do I necessarily feel like booking too many angles is like the issue right now with AEW. You know, there are a lot of discussions about what the issue might be, I think, but primarily it's the fact that I think WWE is enough to satisfy most people's wrestling palates.
Well, you're not going to be getting less programming. You're going to be probably getting more. The conclusion from this show. All right. Thanks, everyone, for the feedback and getting through any audio issues on our end. And we are going to be back Tuesday. Tune in at 1 Eastern for The Wellness Policy with Neil, Jordan, and Wei. And plenty more to come this week. We will have Pollock and Thurston and Rewind Away on Wednesday. So keep up to date with everything at postwrestling.com and dive in at postwrestlingcafe.com, where we will be releasing both MCU Later and an edition of Rewind Away later on this week, along with your regular favorites, Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course. That is it for us. Good night.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.